Beneath him, the coach rocked and jolted in an alarming and unpredictable fashion. He very nearly abandoned his intent in those first moments, but after the initial shock had passed, he determined to go forward with his plan. Crawling on his hands and knees, he moved backwards to the end of the coach and paused at the space over the coupling that separated his carriage from the next. There was a gap of some 5 feet. Some moments passed before he gathered the nerve to jump to the next car, but he did so successfully. From there, he crawled painfully down the length of his car. His frock coat was blown forward, covering his face and shoulders and flapping around his eyes. After some moments of struggle with the garment, he shook it off and saw it sail away, twisting in the air, and eventually fall by the roadside. The whirling coat looked enough like a human form to give him pause. It seemed a kind of warning of the fate that awaited him if he made the slightest error. Freed of the coat, he was able to make more rapid progress down the second-class coaches. He jumped from one to the next with increasing assurance, and eventually reached the luggage van after a period of time he could not estimate. It seemed an eternity, but he later concluded it had not required more than 5 or 10 minutes. Once atop the van, he gripped an open slapper and uncoiled his length of hemp. One end was dropped down the slapper, and after a moment he felt a tug as Ager, inside the van, picked it up. Pierce turned and moved to the second slapper. He waited there, his body curled tight against the constant, unyielding blast of the wind. And then a ghastly green hand, Ager's, reached out, holding the end of the rope. Pierce took it. Ager's hand disappeared from view. Pierce now had his rope slung from one slapper to the next. He tied the loose ends about his belt, and then, hanging on the ropes, eased himself over the side of the van until he was level with the padlock. In that manner, he hung suspended for several minutes while he twirled the padlock with a ring of picks, trying one betty after another, and operating, as he later testified, with considerable understatement, with that degree of delicacy which circumstances permitted. Altogether, he tried more than a dozen keys, and he was beginning to despair that any would turn the trick when he heard the scream of the whistle. Looking forward, he saw the Cook's Tunnel, and an instant later he was plunged into blackness and churning sound. The tunnel was half a mile long. There was nothing to do but wait. When the train burst into the sunlight again, he continued working with the keys, and was gratified when almost immediately one of the picks clicked smoothly in the mechanism. The padlock snapped open. Now it was a simple matter to remove the lock, swing the crossbar free, and kick the door with his feet until Burgess slid it open. The morning train passed the sleepy town of Godston, but no one noticed the man dangling on the rope, who now eased down into the interior of the luggage van and collapsed on the floor in absolute exhaustion.